You're listening to Ross FM 94.6, and this is the WOW Show, World of Women. In the studio, on the line from India today, we have Natika Bal. Natika, you're very welcome to the WOW Show here in Ireland, the World of Women, and thank you so much for joining us in the studio.
And thank you so much, Susan, for having me. It's a real honor and privilege to be talking to someone in Ireland, especially because I studied in a school which is originally from Ireland, which is Loretto Convent. So
no
I have
way.
A connection with Ireland for sure.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe that you actually studied in a Loretto college.
Yes, I did.
Oh my God, I hope it was good for you.
Yes.
So have you been to Ireland, Natika?
I haven't been to Ireland, but I have lived in UK, which is not really the same thing.
It's close enough. Natika, I had a read of your bio, and you've had a very, very interesting life. And I just have some questions here that I'm going to ask you. But I'd just like to start by asking, can you tell us a little bit about where you were born and where did you grow up?
Yes.
Okay.
So I was born in New Delhi, India. And that's where I grew up. That's where I went to Loretto.
All right.
For my schooling. And yeah. And then I did my college, my basic graduation in India, in Delhi itself. And then eventually I moved to UK where I did my master's.
Excellent.
From Lancaster University in UK.
And yeah. What was it like growing up in India?
I've never been asked that question before.
Just for our Irish listeners who we wouldn't have an idea.
I think it's pretty much same as anywhere else in the world, I feel now, because India is very, very progressive.
Absolutely.
And fortunately for me, I was brought up with really well-educated parents and working parents, both of them.
Excellent.
So it was, they brought me up just like they would, with no differentiation being a girl or a boy.
Okay.
Like, as they would. So they educated me very well. And there was never, there was a lot of focus on education, which is very exciting.
Well, that is
good. And I think all opportunities were given to us to grow and blossom into a full human being.
Well, that sounds absolutely wonderful. It sounds like you had some great parents there and a nice start in life, Natika. Did you always want to be in business when you were a child? Did you consider yourself to be entrepreneurial?
You know, I don't know about that, but I always dreamt of being on a front cover of a business magazine.
Wow. So I guess that answers my question.
So I always thought that I needed to be on front. It was always about front covers.
Yeah.
I didn't know what.
That's fantastic.
I would really visualize that. And, originally, because being brought up in a traditional family and India, like, we usually believe that it's the husband that's going to do well. And therefore, the wife gets to be on the cover with him. So I always had this opinion that it's going to be my man who's going to make it successful.
Wow,
and I will be his pretty wife around on the cover with him. But I don't think it's happening anymore. I'll have to do it myself.
That's an excellent story. You completed your MS in finance in 1999 and you had 6 very successful years in the corporate sector. Can you tell us, at what point did you realize that this was not for you?
Yeah, so, I started my career with General Electric in US. I worked for them there. And then after a year, I moved back to India because my parents wanted to get me married. And I think it was 6 years into my corporate career, I just felt that number crunching was so boring. I didn't enjoy it anymore. There was no passion in it. And I somehow enjoyed meeting human beings. But with my work, I only dealt with numbers and screens.
Yeah.
And that sort of, that lack of human connection was
Absolutely.
Getting to me. So I just wanted to leave everything and go talk to people. That's where it started. Can I speak to a human being?
I completely understand. I was in programming and it can be a very, very tedious affair when you're just looking at a screen and code all day. So I completely identify with you in that regard. You set up your own business, a media company called Parallel Circles Entertainment. Can you just tell me, what was it like being out on your own in the business world after working for a company for so long?
So I think to begin with, I'd also like to share how I got into it, Susan, because it's quite an interesting story.
That would be great.
So when I quit my job and I took a sabbatical, I had no clue what I was going to do, which usually is the case. But I just had some dreams, you know, which unfulfilled college dreams of acting. And I took to full-time theater for about 2 years. And, you know, it was like, I said, all right, you know, if I'm not working and not making money, might as well get all my checklist done, you know, like, okay,
tick it off.
Done. So dancing done and singing done, you know. So while I was in theater, there was one, a colleague of mine who was working for an ad agency. And he felt that, you know, I have some creative talent, which I had no clue that I did because I was always this number crunching nerd. and he said, why don't you, you know, come and freelance and direct some corporate films for us and, you know, give your creative inputs just like as a hobby. And it started with that. And 6 months into, you know, doing this freelancing work, I was making peanuts. Like as a freelancer, I don't make great money in India.
Yes.
So my husband, like, you know, he was like, dude, what's wrong with you? You were making good income. Now you want to freelance for peanuts. I mean, if you have to do this, you might as well start your own company. And so it was literally like that was the decision. Okay, now I want to do this. It's seeming interesting at the moment. So can I start my own company? And what does it take to start a company? You need some good people.
Yes.
And I'm like, okay, that I know. And resources, all right, that, you know, husband will sponsor for the beginning. And one client. And, you know, I got a client and I was like, okay, bam, let's start. You know, so that's how it started. Another very interesting thing about the media company was that, you know, because I wasn't too sure how long I wanted to do this.
Yes.
So I didn't want to set up a full-fledged office.
Okay.
So I cracked a very interesting deal, you know. I mean, and people swear by it. Like, I think it's a business model which people get, you know, perplexed at how could you manage. So what I did is I Googled the best editor, the best music director, and, you know, the best production people in Mumbai where I stay.
Okay.
And I met them and I said, like, you know, I want to start this company, but I don't want to keep full-time employees. And you guys are like experts in your own areas, in your domains. And I know you come at a certain price. So I want to position my company as a niche company. Now, I cannot give you a contract, but I can promise you, and you know, one thing that whenever I come to you for work, what you need to promise me is you'll never say no to my work. Okay, so if I get an assignment, you have to take it up. You cannot say, sorry, I'm busy with something else. And in return, I will give you twice as your going rate.
Wow,
whatever is your
excellent.
Going rate at the time, I will give you that. Okay, and they kind of agreed. It's working for us the last 12 years. Yeah, Susan, and it's working for me for like last 12 years.
12 years,
I have no fixed expenses. I only have to pay them when I have when I have a client coming in for a requirement.
Oh, you're such
so
a natural.
The company's on autopilot.
Wow, that's actually that's a wonderful way of doing business. And if you look at a lot of the business models that are out there now with the likes of Airbnb and companies like that, they don't actually own anything, you know, and they don't have massive overheads.
Yeah.
And I think to be successful in business, it is all about keeping your overheads low initially and exactly as you did it, looking for the best people in the industry and paying them when you have work or getting paid when you have the work. I think that's a fantastic story and I absolutely love it. In 2008, your life took a turn, not to move away from the positive here, but it is a part of your life. Your life took a bit of a turn when you were diagnosed with major clinical depression. Can you talk to us a bit about the events which led to this diagnosis and how did you know that something was wrong? Or when did you first realize that something was wrong?
Right. So, you know, Susan, the reason for depression was challenges with my marital life, to be honest.
Okay.
Challenges in the relationship area.
So there was a trigger.
And Yes, there was massive trigger in the relationship area. But having said that, I mean, when did I realize I actually tried to kill myself twice. So there was two suicide attempts. The first one was ignored by, no, that's fine. I mean, I think it's the best part of my life.
You're so positive.
It turned me into who I am today. So I'm very happy about it. the first time I did, the family didn't take me seriously. They thought it was just one of those people, how they shove it under the carpet, right? Like it never happened, right?
Gosh, it's because of the horrendous nature of the situation. I think people try to block it out and pretend it didn't happen.
Yes. And 9 years ago, there was no concept of life coaches. It was always true, like going to a traditional psychiatrist or a psychologist, and that was a big taboo in India. Like it was, and, it's like, you know, they would call you, are you mad? The first time, family ignored it. The second time, it got a bit serious. So they said, oops, something needs to be done about this. This is not normal. So they actually took me to a very popular hospital in Mumbai for a checkup. And, when they ran my psychometric tests and did a few other tests, they discovered that under 0 to 10, I was about 9.8 depressive.
Oh, my gosh.
And, and the doctors felt that, she's... going to kill herself if not sedated or not put on very heavy doses of anti-anxiety pills. So antidepressants and anti-anxiety pills. And they offered my family two choices. They said one option is we can give her mental shocks.
So
get her out immediately. And the other option is to put her on severe doses of antidepressants, but that will sort of sedate her like 24/7. Okay. And we'll have to put her into therapy for 3 times a week. And, honestly, mental shocks, images that we see from our movies, right? I mean, it's very scary.
It's still actually practiced in Ireland.
I'd rather get sedate. Yes, unfortunately.
And in some places.
In India, too. It is practiced. Really? It's not like it's not. So I just said no to it, and I said, that's all right. I prefer to die rather than mental shocks.
Oh, gosh.
So let's try something else. So they said, okay, he'll put you on doses of antidepressants. It's going to slow your brain down. I said, what does slow your brain down really mean? And they said that, it could mean partial amnesia of sorts. It could mean, we don't exactly know what impact it'll have because each individual body reacts differently.
Okay.
But it'll make you sort of a semi-vegetable
state,
you won't be able to do the kind of things you do. So I was like, that's okay, we'll live with it. It's better than, going for a mental shock, because by then I had realized that there's a problem that I have and it needs a solution. Obviously, whatever I had done on my own was not solving it. Right?
Okay.
That's the reason there was constant attempt to die. And, when you're sane, when you're not in that emotional surge, you do realize that something is wrong with you. It's not normal behavior.
Yes,
so why
of
not
course.
Fix it? Yeah, so I agreed to the medication, and the medication continued for almost three and a half years. But there was zero improvement. Despite the fact I was going for therapy, there was not much that changed.
Oh, gosh.
What did change for me is in the fourth year of fighting clinical depression, I got introduced to self-help books and some motivational CDs. Till then, I only knew academic books. I only knew that you have to study them to get good grades.
Okay.
I didn't know anything beyond that. I was not a reader. But these self-help books and motivational CDs really, really, really turned my life around for me. And, they started... Wow. Becoming my new compensation mechanism rather than food and shopping and, chocolate.
Yeah.
Like it moved to something healthy. And that's where a very, very slow improvement started kicking. It took another 3 years from then to actually recover completely.
Wow.
But at least the turnaround happened at that time.
I can't believe that you suffered for that long, but I'm very...
That's a long answer.
That's a long time to actually... I don't mean to keep reverting back to this, but this is something that I just would like to know the answer to myself. How did they diagnose you exactly? I mean, did they test levels of serotonin in your brain, or how do they make a diagnosis of major depression? Is it based purely on symptoms, or can they do a physical test?
And live my life the way I was leading before all of this happened was so strong that no matter what happened, even if I didn't see any progress for days and months, I would keep going and keep going and keep going. You know, there were years. I mean, imagine, Susan, going 3 times a week for therapy for 3 years. And 3 years is 3,000 days. 1,000 days, right?
Yeah.
And not seeing any improvement whatsoever.
I can't imagine that.
Always sitting and crying all the time. And, you know, no matter how much. Like, it's like if I skip a dose of medication, I'm gone. You know, like I'm hysterical. Yeah. Like, it's crazy days. But I knew that I wanted to get okay. So I was willing to do anything and everything possible. People told me go to, you know, alternative healing. I tried everything. I tried EFT on me. I tried NLP on me. I tried past life regression. I tried hypnosis. I tried tarot. I tried crystal. I tried every single modality available to
Gosh.
Get okay. I never left any stone unturned because I was like, I have to get all right.
And there was,
it has to be back to normal.
And there was still no improvement after 3 years.
No.
That's incredible.
And I'll tell you why. Do you want to know why, Susan?
Yes.
Because, you know, all these 3 years, I was looking at solutions from outside of myself.
Okay.
So there was a lot of BCD going on, a lot of blaming, complaining, and defending my own position in life. So it was, you know, I'm like this because
such
and
so
did this.
I understand.
Or so and so said that. So there was a huge victim mode, you know, and when one is in victim mode, one doesn't accept anything, any responsibility for the situation they're in, right?
Okay.
So that changed for me with the self-help books. Suddenly, I was like, okay, you know, maybe there's something
up with me.
Yeah, and even though there was no acceptance, even then, you know, despite reading, I tell you, I read 300 books, Susan. Okay?
Wow, that's incredible.
Still, the acceptance wasn't there. But there's one lady, okay, and I wish someday I can meet her and give her a hug because, you know, she changed my life. So once I read this book called Battlefield of the Mind, written by Joyce Meyer, right? Joyce Meyer is a pastor in the U.S.
Yeah.
And, you know, even though I'm a born Hindu, I follow Christianity because, you know, born and brought up in the convent culture, right? So
yeah,
it comes naturally to me to pray to Jesus and Mother Mary. And I got really hooked on to her teachings in that book. And it sort of put me on an urge to go Google her. And when I did, I came across a beautiful YouTube video where she was addressing some 40,000 women. And it was a pre-recorded YouTube video. And in that, you know, I watched that video hoping that maybe she says something and I'll get my clue for the next, you know, next thing to do in life.
Yeah.
And I was like almost bored through that because it was just like her book, nothing new.
Yeah.
But just I was about to switch off the video and she said that I'll open the floor now to Q&A, questions and answers. And I got really excited. I thought, what if somebody asked my question today? You know, let me watch this, you know. And to my luck, you know, my soul sister from America, okay, she asked the same question that's going on in her mind. She says, you know, I did everything my parents ever wanted, my husband ever wanted, my children want, my in-laws want. I take care of anything and everything they want, and yet I suffer. Why me? And, you know, Joyce said to her 6 words, Susan, which completely changed my life for me. She said to her, you hurt, you heal, and you help.
Excellent.
And, you know, when she said that, the whole thing about being victim turned into, dude, I'm not supposed to be a victim to my story. I'm supposed to be a heroine of my story.
That's incredible.
And that reframe in the mind, you know, that I have to therefore now make sure I get okay. Because I'm supposed to help other people. So, you know, that whole thing that I've been so successful all my life. And,
yeah.
You know, where has my life come to? And there's no purpose. There's no goal anymore. Like, that changed, you know. And there was this huge determination that, okay, I have to get okay. I have to lead by example. I have to become that person that can inspire people by my life. And I have to then go out and help millions of people who are suffering. Because there are simple tools that can help them. But they're not aware. So they keep piling on the emotion inside them, and then it turns into depression.
That's incredible, even listening to that. And you know, with success can actually bring you to a point where you say to yourself, what's next? And you kind of can get to a point in your life where you feel you have everything you want materially, you have everything you need, and you feel, what can I do? And the only answer, in my opinion, is help others.
Yes.
You know, as you've just clearly stated there yourself, and just I've just been reminded of it. And often people think, well, the only way I can help other people is to give them money or to help them, you know, through finances. That's not the only way you can help people.
No.
You can certainly help people to change their lives. And ultimately, then they will go on and help other people as well.
Absolutely.
It's powerful stuff there. The six words, just incredible how something so simple can have such a profound effect on your life.
Yes.
You know, and you have an amazingly positive attitude, considering everything that you've been through. How do you keep yourself motivated?
So I think it's those six words again, I would say, because it's just, for me, it's like, you know, I think, you know, one of the things which I always wanted to understand was that why somebody like me, who is always good at studies, always good at, you know, anything I ever picked up, how could I get down there in the dump?
Yeah.
And one of the things I realized is that our education system, unfortunately, does not train us into, you know, leading fulfilled life. It's more about, you know, there's a given input and there's a given output, and that's what we're trained. We're trained not to think for ourselves. We're trained to take orders. We are not trained on life skills that we need to lead a good life. And that's where there's a huge gap. So for me, it became almost like a mission that my goal is to help people lead a sensible life, lead an emotionally healthy life, you know, and build on their emotional strength. And I'm so passionate about it that I don't even need any other motivation. It's not about the money and nothing of those sorts. You know, it's all about how can I serve my fellow human beings so none of them have to go down where I went.
Gosh, that's
you know, because
wonderful.
I've seen the worst, and I don't want any of depression. Of course, there are many more other problems people go through, and you know, and they are big in their own right. But in depression, I think I've seen the worst.
Yes.
And to come back, you know, was the mission that, you know, I'm going to help other people. So it's like, it's 12:30 a.m. in India, and I can talk to you this energetically because I'm passionate about it. You know, it's like,
that's unbelievable. Thank you. Thank you so much. Natika, you've been trained. You know, your life is so interesting, but you've been trained by some of the best in the industry, including Tony Robbins, who is a personal favourite of mine as well.
Yes.
How did you feel Tony Robbins had a major effect on your life too?
Totally. You know, and I tell you why, because I think Tony is the only...
True.
I don't even know what to call him, you know.
A true coach.
Strategic interventionist, coach, whichever way you like to put it. He's the only man who serves with his heart.
Yes, because he's already a multi-millionaire.
Yes, and that resonates with me big time. Because I think when Tony is working with people, his heart goes out for them. He genuinely cares. And that... Like, I've worked with so many people, but I've never felt that kind of affiliation with anybody. In fact, I'm going to be meeting again, Tony, next week. I'm going for Date with Destiny to Florida.
Excellent.
Yeah, so I'm really excited because I watch him and it inspires me that, you know, he's a man with heart. He's not out there. You see many trainers, you know.
Yeah.
I'll give you an example. Like, you know, people have this concept of, you come to my workshop and then I'm going to sell you another one and I'm going to sell you another one.
And it never ends.
Right?
There's so many levels.
And there's like a whole, and they're like whole funnel around it. And what's sad is that if somebody did not want to buy, the trainer would make that person feel like so bad, like as if their life would be ruined if they didn't sign up for their program.
I've been in that situation myself. I've been to workshops where that has happened, where I've almost been insulted walking out the door. But I did go and see Tony Robbins. And the one thing I find about Tony Robbins is you can feel his energy the second he appears on stage.
And he never sells hard.
No.
You know, he doesn't sell. In fact, he's so bad at selling, he has to hire people to come and sell for him.
And he doesn't even have to sell because he's already a multi-millionaire. So he is so, so passionate. And as you said, he really does do it from the heart.
Yeah. So, you know, so that, you know, I wanted to be one of those people that if you have walked into, you know, my aura or any close to me, I want to make sure I leave you empowered.
But Natika,
if
I can feel...
If you don't want to buy my workshop, it's fine. You know?
I can actually feel your energy through the airwaves. I'm actually feeling completely inspired at just having spoken to you for a few minutes. Can you talk to us about the business that you're in now at the moment? Obviously, you've touched on it briefly. What is it exactly that you do now?
So, you know, Susan, I work on people's emotional strength quotient.
Okay.
With respect to money, with respect to their relationships, with respect to their own self-image, you know, their own connection to their self, you know, so spirituality inside out.
Yeah.
And with respect to their businesses and to their relationships and to their charisma. So that's what I specialize in, basically working on people's mindset. Because there are enough and more trainings available where there's lots of information available. But I look at real transformations and change. And whatever work I do is actually bannered under a tagline, which is now my registered trademark, called The Game of Life.
Okay. Excellent.
So, yeah. So that's what I do. There are lots of workshops I do. I also do one-on-one coaching. But as I said, I'm not of the school of thought. Coaching is not my main business because I don't want people addicted to coaching. And
yes.
I don't think that a normal person needs to come every week to see a coach or every month to see a coach. I work like a strategic interventionist. So, you know, if you're stuck up, you come here for a session, bam, you're gone. You don't need to come back, stay in touch on what's if there's anything major that comes up where you feel stuck, come back again and get an intervention and that's it. So I don't want to keep people hanging because one of the things I felt that, you know, 6 years of my life got wasted because I was kept hanging. I think a lot of things, I could have recovered in 6 months had my family been aware of what processes are available in alternative healing.
That's
and
so
if
true.
My mentors wanted me to get okay faster, right? A lot of trainers and coaches want to keep people hanging because that's, you know, filling up their bills. And no offense to them, I understand where they come from, but I never wanted to be one of those.
Yeah.
I wanted to be very clear, you know, I want to save you your life and your time. So I will charge you a premium, but I will not waste your time.
Yeah, so the results will be there. Natika, you're an international best-selling author of the book, The Queen of the Comeback, and I absolutely cannot wait to go and buy it. Can you tell us a bit about what it was like writing the book and what inspired you to actually do it? Obviously, your story was probably one of the main motivating events in your writing of the book. Is that right?
That's right. In fact, I attended a workshop by a guy called Jerry Roberts called Publish a Book and Grow Rich.
It's a very funny story
because I went to the workshop and I had no desire to be an author, never thought of being an author, didn't even want to be a blogger, you know, none of those things, okay? But I got an invite and I went and I asked, you know, I never like to go anywhere alone. So I said, can I get my few friends along? And they said, yeah, you could get 2-3 friends. And I took 3 friends along for this seminar.
Excellent.
And, you know, all of them were getting so excited about the seminar. And I was getting worried that, am I stupid that I'm not getting this right? So, you know, the first one signs up to be an author. The second one signs up to be an author. The third one also signs up to be an author. And I'm like, dude, this is peer pressure now. I better go. Otherwise,
peer pressure.
I decided to be an author under peer pressure.
I can think of worse things.
So I was like, okay, everybody's being an author. Why not me? And I'll share with you something very interesting for your audience. And then I got really stuck because I didn't know what to write now. And I was like, what am I supposed to write? So, interestingly, I had a very, very beautiful chance meeting with Dennis Whiteley.
Okay.
And, you know, he asked me, okay, so I believe you're authoring a book. And I said, yeah, I've written the first word. It's called The. And he's like, why wouldn't you write more? I said, I have no clue. There's so many people who've written these self-help books.
Oh,
what am I going to write? Which is different, you know? So, I'm not the kind who channels things in, so I can't write something which is different. So, he says, Nitika, listen, you know, it doesn't have to be the best book on the subject. I hope you realize that. And it doesn't have to be the only book on the subject either. And it doesn't have to be your only book either, right? So you could, you know, it's only the first expression of who you really are as a person. And there's there's going to be, you know, an energy signature attached to your writing, and there will be an audience out there that is relate only with your writing, even though you're saying the same thing again and again, which has already been said, but they will not get it from those authors because their energy doesn't match, you know, but with you, it might match and they will get it. So you should write it. And I was like,
he's good.
Wow. Yeah. I was like, that sounds like a good advice. It doesn't have to be the best book.
Yeah. And, that takes the pressure off a bit.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, now I'm going to write one. So that's how it happened. And I'm telling you, Susan, until the book was out and it was actually read by close to like 100 close friends, and everybody came back saying it's a fantastic book. I didn't even think I wanted to promote it anywhere.
Gosh,
but
really?
But now that we've got really good reviews, like I'm working hard now to promote it offline in India as well as Amazon in India, because it was like, who's going to read my book? You
know? I am going to read your book. I can't wait to get it. But I just think congratulations for getting as far as publishing a book. I mean, most people, that's their actual dream. And you've got your book published, and you're actually an international bestseller. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Well, huge congratulations. I mean, that's just such a phenomenal achievement. I can't wait to get it. Natika, it's available on Amazon. Is that right?
It is available in Amazon in India, but you could download the Kindle version.
The Kindle version as well. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
And that's The Queen of the Comeback by Natika Bal.
Yes.
Brilliant. Just moving on to my next question here. You recently addressed the annual Women's Economic Forum. Can you tell us what that was like?
Yes. I think Women Economic Forum is a beautiful initiative which is started by Dr. Harbin Arora.
Okay.
And, you know, she's put together like a large group of women across the globe who are basically there in the spirit of sisterhood, promoting each other as women entrepreneurs, or, you know, just uplifting women who've, you know, taken a sabbatical from work and are feeling inconfident, and just encouraging them to get restarted with life, or people who've dealt with massive issues in their personal lives to, you know, come out and shine again. So that's the initiative. And I'm actually the chairperson for one of their chapters for Maharashtra, which is a large state in India. And so I think sharing my story from the stage is always inspiring for me, because I know that, you know, when I finished talking, I had so many women walk up to me saying that either they've dealt with depression themselves, but they've never shared it, and they feel scared that they'll be judged.
Yeah.
And today I gave them permission to talk about it. And a lot of mothers came, you know, with challenges with their teenage children.
Yeah.
And you know, asked for my help with them. And it's touching to see that how just by sharing your story, you can impact so many people.
Gosh, that's
because
so
you
true.
When you put your vulnerability out there, then you give permission to everybody else to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
And I think that is the most beautiful part about sharing anything from any stage, you know, whether it's Women Economic Forum or any other stage for that matter. That has really, really been great for me.
That's a wonderful thing. And it takes away the sense of aloneness that people can have.
Yes.
You know, it really does. Yes. And it makes you feel connected and that you're part of something, as opposed to being separate and living in a dark space.
Absolutely.
It's like with depression. This is really interesting as well. You're the official life coach of the Miss Universe finalists. So
one of my students, like, I mean, I wouldn't say student, but like a coachee or a client, whichever way you like to put it, Shraddha Shashidhar, she's representing India at Miss Universe right now. So she's won the Miss India title. And yeah, tomorrow is her finale. So I'm really nervous for her. Keeping my fingers crossed.
Oh, but my gosh. And India do pretty well certainly in Miss World anyway.
Yes. In fact, I wanted to share with you that Manishi is my client too. So,
okay.
You know, so I'm like fingers crossed because Manishi is one, and now we're waiting for Shraddha to win. So it'll be like a huge, huge thing.
Oh my God, that's going to be fantastic.
Yeah. In fact, Peden, who's representing India at Miss Supranational, is also a client. And wonderful girls. And Manishi, I mean, We did 2-3 sessions for her, major interventions, and look at her, where she is today. You know, it's been an inspiring journey watching that girl, really. She's a fabulous, fabulous child.
Wow. Really. It's just amazing that you're the actual life coach for the finalists. I think that's absolutely, absolutely incredible.
In fact, Manashi returns must have just landed in India right now because I was supposed to go to the airport, but I told them that, you know, I have this interview.
Oh, with gosh. Susan, so I'm so sorry to.
No, not at all, Susan. This is pre-planned. But we do have a welcome party for Manashi Monday night. So I'm going to be there and, yeah, greet her, because it's really an honor she's brought to the country and to everybody, because she's really, you know, she's really lived up to the expectations of each and every expert who's worked with her.
That's
and
fantastic.
She's a fabulous, fabulous girl.
And yeah. Can you tell us, when is the Miss Universe competition being televised?
Yes, it's tomorrow, 4 p.m. U.S. time on Fox Channel.
Oh, Fox Channel, 4 p.m. U.S. time. So I'll actually definitely be watching that tomorrow now. And I'll be saying sorry to the TV for the airport trip. I was having a look at your bio earlier. You've been awarded so many things. You've been awarded the WOW Winners of Worthiness. And it's also the name of the radio show here, World of Women. You were awarded the Women's Excellent Award for Women of Substance, Courage, Resilience and Determination. And you were nominated for that. How did it feel to be awarded that?
You know, I think I don't definitely work for the awards. But having said that, awards are, you know, they really push me too. I wouldn't say that, because, you know, it's recognition always works, right?
Absolutely.
When you're appreciated for the work you do.
You
do more. It's inspiring. And it's, I think more than that, for me, it's a measure of the impact I'm creating. And to me, that gives a lot of satisfaction. If the fact that my work is being recognized means I'm doing something right. And to me, that angle of the award is very, very satisfying. So it's not so much for that, you know, people will know me or there's any fame attached. You know, for me, whether it's Manushi or whether it is, you know, the neighbor next door who may be a client, and for me, all of them are same, because, you know,
it doesn't matter,
right? I got to do my work.
Yeah.
So, but when they award you in places like Women Economic Forum, like Exceptional Women of Excellence, like, it shows to me that I am doing something right, and
absolutely,
the impact that I dream of creating has begun. You know, it has started. Of course, there's lots and lots of work still to be done. I've just gotten started. I'm only 40. So at least another 40 years of work to go.
Gosh, easily. So just on that note, because we are, do you know, I could talk to you for the next 5 hours, because you're such a pleasure to actually talk to. But we're actually coming up on 40 minutes now. And just on that note, what is the goal? Do you have future plans? Are you very much keeping things in the day, or do you have specific goals that you want to achieve?
I do have a 10-year vision. I would like to host a TV show just like Oprah Winfrey in India.
Oh my gosh, I have that ambition too. We can set up a challenge now.
Yeah.
Who's going to do it first?
I think we need many Oprahs. The way
absolutely.
The world is going.
Absolutely.
We have room for everyone.
Yes, we need an Irish Oprah, we need a UK Oprah, an Indian, but that's a phenomenal goal to have. And
we need an army of Oprahs, you know, somebody who can, you know, regionalize the whole concept and talk in their native language and make it available to people who do not understand a foreign language, for example, in English, right?
So, yes, of course.
I mean, somebody who can relate with the emotion of the people in their native language. I think that's what we need.
That's absolutely true.
So I think
within
India, there is scope for too many Oprahs, you know? So we can have North, South, East, West, and West.
Oh, yeah, because you have so many different dialects. But I think
we
that's...
We need an army of light workers.
But so we do need an army of Oprahs, though, because people who go on to the Oprah show, it is a form of therapy, and there is a lot of self-help there as well. And again, going back to the point of taking away the aloneness of a situation and helping people to connect. Natika, I can seriously see you being the Indian Oprah, and that's going to happen before the 10 years for definite. I just want to say a very special thank you for taking time out of your night, because it is midnight there in India at the moment. You've made such a huge effort to come on the show here today, and we're honoured to have you as a guest here on the World of Women. And Natika, I certainly hope that our paths will cross again in the future. Before we go, could you just tell people how they can listen to you speaking, or how they can get in touch with you?
Yes. They could get in touch with me three ways. One is on my website, which is www.nidhikabehal.com, which is NIDHIKABAHL.com.
Okay.
Or they could connect with me through my Facebook page, which is author.nidhikabehal. So it's the same, author.nidhikabahl.com. So I think Excellent. These are the two easiest ways to get in touch with me, and they can drop me a message on Messenger if they want and say, hi, I'm from Susan's show, and I'm very happy to talk to them.
Well, that's excellent. And I will give out information at the end of the show as well. I will give out all of those addresses again. And if anybody wants to contact the show, they can text in on 083-859-9748. Nidhika, I will wish you a very good night, and thank you so much for coming onto the show now. Thank you so much.
It's really my honor and privilege, and I'm humbled and grateful for the opportunity.
Oh, it's an honor for us too, Nidhika. Thank you.